Welcome to Face Connecticut, an in-depth look at today's issues.
Good morning and welcome to another edition of Face Connecticut on WTIC News Talk 1080, 96.5 TICFM, and Light 100.5 WRCH. Aaron Kupek with you this Sunday morning, and we are pleased to be joined by Professor Thomas Worthley. He is an extension educator in forest sustainability in the Department of Natural Resources and the Environment at UConn. Good morning to you, sir.
And good morning to you. It's a pleasure to be here.
Well, Connecticut is heavily forested, more so now than during some other times in our history. Give us a State of the Trees report. How is their health? What's good? What's not so good in Connecticut?
It comes as a surprise to many people that the state is as forested as it is. We have about 59% of our land areas covered by forest land in the traditional rural sense of what you would consider to be woodland or forest. And another 15% on top of that, or approximately, is under a tree canopy in what we would describe as our exurban, suburban, or urban forest resource. These are trees along roadways in people's yards, in the parks, and in places like that. And so we do have quite a bit of tree cover. About 75% of the state is under a tree cover of one sort or another. And it's a valuable resource that we all depend on for cleaning the air and reducing the noise and providing for the water that we all depend on coming out of our faucets and a variety of other benefits that include things like wildlife habitat and recreational resources and things of that nature. Not to mention that we have a thriving forest products, wood products industry in Connecticut that that employs quite a number of people, thousands of people, actually.
But for some trees in particular, it has been a tough, you know, 5 or 4 years recently with first the gypsy moth and then the arrival of the emerald ash borer in Connecticut. Tell us what trees are affected and what sort of damage you're seeing.
The two insects that you have mentioned are both non-native insects that have arrived in Connecticut at different times in the past. Gypsy moth has been around for a long, long time, and there are some agents within the environment that most years keep the gypsy moth population in check. It's kind of naturalized in our environment. It affects primarily oak trees, but when you have just the right conditions, the population of gypsy moth caterpillars can explode, and they will chew on virtually anything they find, except for tulip trees or yellow poplars, as they're commonly known. And their favorite species, of course, is the oaks. In 2016 and 2017, the combination of drought, which affected a fungus which kills the gypsy moth, allowed for a population explosion in eastern Connecticut of gypsy moth caterpillars. And the combination of stresses that included the drought, the gypsy moth defoliations, and several of other pathogens that came into the picture resulted in the deaths of many, many thousands of oak trees throughout eastern Connecticut, along roadways, and in some woodlands, entire stands of oak trees were killed off. Many, many thousands of acres of woodland were affected. The other pest you mentioned, emerald ash borer, is one that we have anticipated for some time. It arrived in Connecticut the first confirmed sighting of emerald ash borer was back in 2012 and 2013, and has slowly spread across the state so that it's found in every county of the state and most towns within the state. And it affects only ash trees. The larvae of the insect lives under the bark of the tree and chews away at the live tissue just beneath the bark of the tree, and feeds on that tissue, and eventually creates galleries under the bark, and the tree can be girdled by this activity, and eventually the tree dies. So we're anticipating the death of most of the ash trees because we don't have a good broad-scale control method for dealing with the emerald ash borer. There are some experimental things, and there are some systemic insecticides that can be used on big trees or ornamental trees or whatever the case may be. But in the woods, along the roadways and things like that, we are expecting to lose most of the ash resource in Connecticut.
Are pests like this affecting trees cyclical? I think about all the street names around Connecticut named after trees that you really don't see in this part of the world anymore. Does this kind of ebb and flow?
Well, the gypsy moth certainly does. And, it's much dependent on weather conditions and so forth and so on. The emerald ash borer is one that's just expanding and expanding. It will eat its way out of food eventually, and won't be as big of a problem. And perhaps some of the young ash trees that we have in some places where ash has been able to regenerate itself, may grow up to be stately trees again. But certainly chestnut trees went through a problem back in the early 1900s, where a fungus came along and killed most of them off. But we still have chestnuts in the forest. We still have chestnut trees in the forest. They just don't get to be very big trees. They grow up a little ways and then they get sick and they die off. So while chestnut is still a component of the forest, we don't get to see very many mature ones. Same with elm trees. Elm went through the problem of Dutch elm disease back in the 1950s and 60s, and we lost most of our large stately elms, and we still have elms around. There's no question about that, but once again, they don't get to be very big trees before they catch the disease and die back.
Given scientific advancements and what you can do to genetically modify organisms these days, is there a chance we might sometime in the future see large stately elm and chestnut trees again in Connecticut?
Well, there is a possibility. Yes, absolutely. And I emphasize the word possibility. There's an awful lot of work going on with American chestnut, doing various breeding studies and, as you say, genetic studies and to try to find the genetic code, if you will, that exists in Asian chestnuts, for example, that they're not susceptible to this disease, and see if it can be bred into American chestnuts to make them more resistant. So there's experiments going on all the time. There are people that have devoted their entire career to finding the solution with respect to chestnut blight. As far as elm is concerned, there's a combination of factors at work there. There's a beetle that carries the disease that affects the trees, and finding a predator for the beetle or finding some sort of genetic solution that makes the tree resistant to the fungus is an area that more research could take place on. With respect to emerald ash borer, there are some experiments underway to try to find a predator that would affect the insect, that would be species, what we call species specific, that it would only affect that insect, so that if we brought it into the environment, it wouldn't affect something else by mistake. But these sort of biological controls are under study as we speak.
Moving back to the oak trees that have been affected by the gypsy moth, a lot of them are still standing, dead, and that can pose a danger, can't it?
Oh, absolutely. What we'll see with standing dead trees is that they'll slowly collapse, and what I mean by that is that they will shed their smaller branches first. Smaller branches will decay and drop straight down out of the tree, and then eventually larger branches will begin to drop out of these trees. And for trees that are close to where human activities take place along roadways and in near people's yards and that sort of thing, it can be a danger. You need to be aware. An awful lot of people are spending time these days, in an effort to get out. We're all doing some sort of quarantine, and in an effort to get out, many people are going on hikes and on trails and in parks and forests and preserves around the state. And they need to be aware that in some places there's quite a number of standing dead trees. The dead branches can drop out of those trees anytime. Under any conditions, it doesn't have to be a windy day. It doesn't have to be a rainy day, but that exacerbates the problem. But branches can drop out any time and can be very dangerous. So they need to have an eye in the canopy as well as an eye on the trail as they move along. The towns and the state and the utility companies are frantically trying to deal with these dead trees that are adjacent to various forms of infrastructure, the power lines and the highways and that sort of thing, in order to avoid potential of dead trees harming people driving by and that sort of thing. Eventually, a standing dead oak tree or ash tree will, the root system will decay. What anchors it to the ground will no longer be there. And gravity is the law. It will, the tree will eventually tip over in the whatever direction it happens to be leaning. And that's when it could be the most dangerous, because that's the biggest and heaviest part of the tree, the trunk, of course.
You are listening to Face Connecticut. We are talking to Professor Thomas Worthley, Extension Educator in Forest Sustainability in the Department of Natural Resources and the Environment at the University of Connecticut. Now, talking about the trees affected by the gypsy moth, are all of them that were hit in 2016 and 2017 dead now, or are some of them still dying?
There has been some residual post, post-infestation mortality caused by some follow-up stresses. There's a native insect called two-lined chestnut borer, for example, that will invade oak trees that are stressed. There are some fungal diseases that will affect oak trees that are stressed out. And so we may have lost a couple. But most of the trees that survived the gypsy moth infestation are doing pretty well now. They've all leafed out. They have pretty good crowns. They're getting plenty of moisture the last couple of years, and we expect them to continue to survive. There are a few trees that I've noticed in my travels where that were affected by the gypsy moth caterpillars, and they the crowns are half dead. Part of the crown died off, and some of the branches remained alive. And these trees are tricky too, so they're ones that you might need to keep an eye on.
How big an issue is it of trees getting strangled essentially by invasive species? I think about bittersweet, for example, in my yard has killed a couple of trees because it's gotten just out of hand.
Well, there are a number of invasive species that are associated with our forests. Most of them are vines or shrubs, small shrubs. And the biggest problem we have with invasive species is that the deer don't eat them. not that that's funny, but the deer, we have a very large deer population that eats almost every native native plant that it can find. And this includes seedlings of what we would consider to be desirable species of oak and maple and that ash and that sort of thing that we would like to have in our forest. But, you know, the acorns sprout, the seedling comes up, the deer browses it off, and it can't compete with an invasive shrub nearby like Japanese barberry or Oriental bittersweet that that the deer don't eat. And so a lot of times these invasive shrubs and vines take over a site and prevent native species from growing. And as in the case that you mentioned, very often they will get into small trees in such abundance that they'll actually, you know, pull them down or bend them over or weaken them to a degree that they can't survive.
Talk to us about the role of trees in fighting climate change and the debate that's going on right now.
Well, trees, the forest resource in itself as a whole is a vast carbon sink. Trees pull carbon dioxide out of the atmosphere during the process of photosynthesis in order to grow, in order to create more wood. And as they add a ring of wood every year to their trunks and branches, they store an awful lot of carbon, and they sequester a lot of carbon out of the atmosphere. And actively growing trees will be pulling carbon from the atmosphere and therefore are seen as a big part of the solution to reducing carbon dioxide and therefore addressing climate change issues. In order to do that job, the forest has to be robust, it has to be growing, and the debate is whether to just do nothing in the forest and let it be and let it take what carbon it will, or whether to try to find management solutions that that will help the forest grow better and help to grow large trees that will store lots of carbon. And then whether to utilize those trees at some point, harvest them and turn them into products, long-lasting products that will keep that carbon stored over a long period of time. So, for example, your grandmother's desk, or your floor in your house, or your furniture, or a railroad tie that lays in the railroad bed for 60 or 70 years, is there long enough to grow another tree? And some of the debate rages around whether it's appropriate to harvest trees and turn them into wood products, and or whether to just leave them in the woods and to continue to try to grow. We don't have all the answers to that debate yet. That's another area of research that's a tremendous amount of research has been done on that. And, you know, for people who are interested in pursuing that, they can contact me. I can send them some references that would provide for some more detailed information. But we in the forestry world, the professional foresters, feel as though it's appropriate to seek management solutions for what forest we have left to optimize carbon sequestration and storage in a balance with the other uses that we put the forest to. And the other side of the question is what sort of management is appropriate for helping our forest be resilient to the changes that are coming along? As climate changes, we have more severe weather events, we have more opportunities for higher temperatures and droughty conditions, and will the forest composition change as a result of that? And are there management solutions that we can apply that will, help the forest to adapt, help the forest to be resilient in the face of these types of changes?
When we started our conversation, you mentioned that Connecticut was, a lot less forested in our history. I'm thinking colonial times. Are there any lessons to be learned when we cut down so many trees so many years ago?
Well, you know, it's interesting. You know, probably the least amount of forest that occurred in Connecticut was in the early 1800s when the agricultural use of land was at its peak. You know, they estimate somewhere between 25% and 30% of the land was occupied by trees, and the rest was farm and pasture and villages and that sort of stuff. And since that time, farm abandonment as farmers moved to the Midwest where there were better soil conditions, that resulted in the forest growing back, because forest is the natural vegetative cover for our part of the world. And if you stop mowing the grass, why, woody vegetation will grow there eventually. You stop plowing the parking lot, woody vegetation will grow there eventually. And it's just a natural way of things. But the forest grew back. Much of it was harvested again in the late 1800s and early 1900s to, for saw timber, but also for the production of charcoal. At the dawn of the industrial age, charcoal was used in the metalworking industry, and much of the forest was cleared away again at that time. And it grew back. And a lot of the forest that we have around us today is a result of that activity. All the trees grew up again at the same time. It was brushland for many years, and then, eventually young forest, and then older forest, and the 100 to 120 year old trees that we see around in many of the woodlands around the state are a result of that that activity that took place back then. What we are lacking is the amount of young forest necessary to replace some habitats for certain animals that require that sort of habitat, or to be the young trees that are growing into older trees that are would be expected to be approaching the end of their natural life expectancy.
As an extension educator, what's the number one question you get asked about trees?
The number one question I get asked about trees, it's usually has to do with some sort of tree problem, you know, some sort of tree disease or tree insect problem that I, you know, the people who call out of the blue, so to speak, usually have a tree or a stand of trees that aren't doing well, and they want to know what's wrong and what they can do about that. And many of the problems we see are related to some of the things that we've already discussed. When I have the opportunity to walk around the woods with woodland owners, the questions are more about how do they accomplish the things they need to do to continue to enjoy the benefits that they expect from being woodland owners in the first place. If a person owns 10 acres of land and they want to have enjoyable recreational time in the woods, or they enjoyed seeing certain types of birds or something of that nature they would want to do, they would want to know what they need to do in order to, how do I encourage this type habitat for this type of bird, or how do I go about managing my trees so that I'm getting the most benefit or the most enjoyment from it.
He is Professor Thomas Worthley, Extension Educator in Forest Sustainability in the Department of Natural Resources and the Environment at UConn. Thank you so much for joining us this morning.
Well, thank you. It's been a pleasure being here.
Thanks for listening to Face Connecticut. I'm Aaron Kupek. Enjoy the balance of your weekend.
Face Connecticut is a production of the News and Public Affairs Department of WTIC Radio.